Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to the Vibrant Health Solutions Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo. And, I am really excited to be here today to talk to you and about an issue that is very near and dear to my heart and to our guest's heart, because it's something that's hit her life very, very strongly, and that is blood sugar balance. In particular, diabetes as a late stage manifestation or a genetically early on stage manifestation. So, excuse me, I got a little bit flustered there as some speakers started talking to me in my computer as I was looking back to find her bio. So, as you know, if you've been following on our email list and our blog lately, we've been talking a lot about blood sugar balance, and it's something that I've seen so many major changes in my clients when we address blood sugar balance and blood sugar control. And I really am excited about our guest today. So let me tell you a little bit about our guest, and then we'll get into talking and sharing with you some very valuable information. So our guest's name is Dr. Jody Stanislaw. And she received a doctorate in naturopathic medicine from Bastyr University in Seattle. She works entirely via phone with patients all around the country. And that's kind of unusual for a naturopath. And I'll be curious to hear how that worked out and how that works out. She's a type 1 diabetic since the age of 7, and she specializes in diabetes. She's an expert in helping patients achieve optimal glucose control. She also works with the general population, advising patients on the naturopathic approach to treating one of today's most common ailments, which, in addition to diabetes being one of the top illnesses, insulin resistance is very underdiagnosed, I believe, and is very, very common in our society. So we'll get into talking about that too. Her focus is on the mind-body connection, as well as the importance of lifestyle as medicine, and is present in every one of her appointments. And she has a popular life transformation program, which is a weekly private call over a 3-month period, allowing them to make dramatic transformations in their overall health and well-being. So welcome, Dr. Jody Stanislaw. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I look forward to our conversation.
I am really excited to have you here, and I don't know how much Lynn explained to you that I'm always talking about blood sugar and the value of blood sugar, and it's one of our base pillars of achieving health. We can't just jump in and try to, Band-Aid up other problems without addressing blood sugar. So the serious forms, obviously, are diabetes, and there's other variations on it, and it's kind of almost a spectrum of diseases. So I really would love to hear your story and how you went from, being diagnosed as a diabetic as a child and into becoming a naturopath and specializing in helping people with blood sugar problems.
Well, great. Yes, I'd be happy to kind of give my background. As you said, I was diagnosed when I was 7, and I spent a week at a children's hospital in Seattle, and I feel very lucky that I got good training there because it really set the stage for having a healthy life. And one big hole in diabetes care is the quality of diabetes care. So that's why I love that we're doing this interview today, because diabetes is a very treatable disease, regardless if you have type 1 versus type 2. But it really depends on how well educated patients are. So I was diagnosed when I was 7. I spent this really super fun, ironically fun week in this children's hospital because they made it so much fun. And that week I thought, I want to do this. Like, these are all these nice, healthy, happy people. These doctors and nurses just were so great that I was like, that is when the seed for me to want to make a difference in other people's lives was planted. And I had a childhood dream of becoming a doctor. So back then, we didn't have blood sugar testing. I peed in a cup, 2 or 3, 4 times a day, and had to take a little drop full of urine and put it in a test tube and see what color the test tube turned with this other tablet in it. And so you had no way to even know what your blood sugar level was in that moment. You could just see how much sugar had spilled over in your urine for the past X number of hours. And I actually, on a side note, have to tell parents these days, how much better they are. They call me and they're terrified that their child got diagnosed. And I'm like, well, first of all, I'm still alive. So that should inspire you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, like, and we're out of the dark ages.
Yeah, I'm like, the advances in that we have blood sugar testing, and now I actually wear a continuous glucose monitor, so I have a little insert, a little wire inserted in any little pinch of fat around my body. I change and move the wire every week, and it tells me onto a screen of this, you know, this little screen that I have in my purse, you know, what my sugar level is at every single minute of the day, you know, and it beeps at me if I'm too low, it beeps at me if I'm too high, so I just put it next to me when I go to sleep, and I don't have to worry about setting my alarm to wake up in the middle of the night and test. And I mean, I always still have insulin or food next to my bed at all times, depending on if I need one or the other. But now I can just go to bed, and if it doesn't beep, I know I'm in the good range. I mean, it's just amazing. So, but back then, you know, they taught you this is exactly what you have to eat, and this is how much you have to eat, and this is at what time you have to eat. And so I was a very, very regimented child in terms of what I could eat and how much. And I literally wrote down everything I ate, I don't know, for how many years, maybe 5 or 10 years. And I had to write down all my numbers and write down my, I mean, luckily, so there's diabetes is such a complicated disease, but your mindset plays a huge role in it. And I feel very blessed that I was just kind of born with a, okay, I'll do it, you know, mindset.
Right.
But another thing that I really credit to my health is that my parents never said, oh, we feel so sorry for you. Oh, I'm so sorry you have this. Oh, what a pity. You know, it was like, okay, this is what we got to do. And this is what you got to do, Joe. And I'm like, okay.
Nice.
So
nice.
That's one of my seven essentials for achieving healthy blood sugar balance is mindset for sure. But like most diabetics, you can get into this negative mindset of, you know, feeling angry and feeling like you need to rebel and, you know, I want to eat
sure.
like everybody else. You know, why right. can't I eat that? Everybody else is. And I ended up in a 2-month eating disorder rehab center in my 20s. And I had adopted a really intense pattern of binging and overeating and then working out. And so it, you know, anyways, I finally became a physician at the age of 35 because for many years I was really disillusioned by the whole healthcare system and thought I don't want to be part of it. But then I found this holistic medical school and graduated at the age of 35, and now I have, you know, a practice where I can help patients all around the country or world via phone. How to achieve healthy blood sugar levels and how to have a vibrant, healthy life living with diabetes.
Awesome. Awesome. And so the whole thing with, I really love that you enjoyed going to this place because they made it enjoyable, which I wouldn't have expected to hear. But, you know, if it was a naturopathic hospital or something, I would have expected that they, because they had an awareness. But, you know, a lot of times that is, the approach, the medical approach is as a victim, right? You feel like a victim. You can't do this. You can't do that. The parents feel victimized because now they don't have this normal kid that they could just take and shoot off to birthday parties and whatever else.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's a blessing that you didn't get to do all that junk that I got to do when I was a kid, right? Because you didn't have some of the other negative side effects of all that sugar and white flour and all the other stuff. So I think it's really, I think it's almost a blessing, right? And you have to always look at the silver lining and all that. So I have a couple of questions, and I know we have a kind of an agenda we want to follow, but there's a really important question that I want to ask you because I've done a lot of reading on the effects of, like, antibodies, right? Because we know that it's an autoimmune disease, really, type 1 diabetes, that the pancreas gets attacked. And I've read a lot about dairy protein and type 1 diabetes. And I'm wondering, you know, where you sit with that and if that had an impact on your progression.
You know, there's many, many theories about why somebody develops type 1 diabetes. I mean, introducing milk protein at too young of an age is definitely a well-found theory. The University of Washington in Seattle is doing, I believe, a 20-year study on just any mother that's willing to report at what age they introduce milk, and if they breastfed, and then, you know, to let them know over the next, you know, 20 years if they develop type 1 diabetes. So major medical institutions are trying to uncover if, you know, if the milk protein has something to do with it. The thing with all autoimmune diseases is it's, they're very poorly understood, the root cause. And then, you know, attacks the brain, rheumatoid arthritis attacks the joints, lupus attacks the connective tissues. And we all know that there's some sort of genetic link with them, but it's never in 100% of the patients. And we all know there's some sort of environmental cause that's definitely proven, because all of the autoimmune diseases are so dramatically on the rise. You know, they're not following a natural linear progression given the increase in population. It's much faster than that. And so the environmental theories of type 1 is definitely not being breastfed, you know, long enough, introducing foreign milk protein too early of an age, low vitamin D, which also affects the immune system. You know, not being breastfed definitely affects gut lining and the healing of, you know, if it, you know, leads towards leaky gut or not. So all of these, although different, are definitely correlated. Heavy metal toxicity, and obviously heavy metals affect gut health. Major infections, either physical traumas or even emotional mental traumas, which also are an insult to the immune system. So all of these, although different, heavy metals, introducing milk, not breastfeeding, low vitamin D, as different as they all weaken the immune system. You know, they all affect the immune system. And we know that the immune system goes awry. So, you know, my theory is I lived in Seattle, you know, low vitamin D. I was breastfed 6 weeks, you know, not long enough. I probably was given milk, not so great. My parents got divorced, probably some emotional trauma. So I feel like I'm a poster child for all... for all the potential causes. You know, heavy metals, I'm sure I was exposed to them. You know, I remember breaking the thermometer and, like, playing with the thermometer.
Playing with
mercury. So, you know, check me off all the boxes. I've got them.
Right. And that's the thing we have to look at. There's the root causes are usually multifactorial. And you can have three of them, and somebody else may have five of them, and both of you develop it, and another person might have seven, and they don't. So there's the genetic factors as well, the genes that predispose, and clearly autoimmune diseases do have specific genetic things that we're finding out as we do the genome project and all that.
Well, an important thing to mention also is the difference between type 1, right? Type 1 is suddenly your immune system goes into this full-blown attack. It kills all your cells that make insulin. You're sick as a dog. You run to the hospital, and now you're put on insulin, right? That's the classic type 1. You're thirsty. You're peeing all the time. You're losing weight. I mean, it's an intense diagnosis for most people. Type 2, you know, the theory has been that there's no autoimmune issue going on. It's just a breakdown of the system. The insulin cells are tired of working. They can't make enough insulin anymore. The cells are tired of responding to insulin, so they're just kind of sleeping, taking a nap, ignoring insulin. All the sugar thus ends up pooling up in the bloodstream. And, you know, it's classically caused by, as we think, you know, a lot has to do with lifestyle, but there's a lot of autoimmune activity being found in even type 2. And that's totally expected given all of the insult to our immune system these days in terms of our food choices, genetically modified foods, pesticides, chemicals, you know, antibiotics, killing off the bacteria in the gut. All of those things weaken the immune system, because 70% of your immune system is in your gut, right? So anytime your gut is affected, so is your immune system. So autoimmunity is also found in type 2. Now, that's not the classic, you know, theory of diagnosis of type 2, but it's definitely, you know, it's definitely showing up.
Now, what do you think of what they call LADA, latent autoimmune diabetics of adults? Have you looked into that very much or seen very many people with that?
Yeah, I definitely have a lot of patients. It's just a combination of both. It's, you know, the beta cells, the insulin-producing cells are weak. The insulin sensitivity is weak. And, you know, in a lot of diseases today, you can throw them into the same pile. And it's, what are you eating? How's the health of your gut? How's your stress level? How much sleep do you get? And are you exercising? You know, and
Yep.
It's LADA is another autoimmune, you know, issue mm-hmm. going on. And anytime you have autoimmune going on, I look at the gut and I look at your diet and I run a food allergy panel. I put you on a gut healing protocol. So, and then you also have to look in the LADA patients at why they have, why they're insensitive to their insulin. Are their hormones, you know, how's the health of their liver? So they have the combination of their insulin and blood sugar regulating system is weak, like a type 2, but then they also have some autoimmunity, like a type 1.
Right.
So
right.
you have to address both with a lot of patients. But right. they have beta cell activity for a long time, and that mm-hmm. that's definitely, I have all of my newly diagnosed type 1s and my LADA patients on beta cell protective protocols, which is never spoken of in that I've heard of in the standard conventional
oh.
medicine. Cause they,
well, tell us about
they just
those.
Assume, yeah, because standard medicine assumes as soon as you get diabetes, your beta cells are on the way out. You know, your insulin production is on the way out. So just be ready for that. And I have a newly diagnosed 7-year-old who's been on my, you know, beta cell protection protocol, and they haven't needed insulin, you know, for I think probably 6 months now. Because, so what kills the beta cells? Well, high sugary foods kills the beta cells. High blood sugar mm-hmm. levels kill the beta cells.
Right.
Eating just too much in general, causing them to work too hard, kills the beta cells. So we've got to not kill the beta cells with our own choices, number one. Number two is we've got to look at why you have autoimmune issues going on, you know, so then you do the whole, you know, treating the gut and, you know, autoimmunity going on to because you can kill your beta cells by eating too much and eating too much sugar, but then you also have the immune system killing the beta cells, so we need to reverse that.
Right.
And then I have a few herbal protocols of herbs that have been shown to invigorate beta cells. So it's a three-part, my beta cell protection protocol is three-part, you know. Stop overusing them, protect them from being killed, and then give them some extra nutrients.
Extra nutrients, great. Great. Would you mind mentioning one or two of those, what those nutrients or herbs are?
Well, the most basic one and the easiest one to get a hold of is actually green tea. You can research green tea, and it has, I don't remember the actual phytochemical involved with green tea, but it definitely, I've read several studies that shows that green tea has an actual protective effect on beta cells.
Mm.
Although I don't generally recommend a lot of the stuff from the literature from the American Diabetes Association, they do have, albeit a very conservative book, but they do have a book called Complementary Herbal Guide for Diabetes or something. And they've got every single, they go over, you know, 10, 20 different vitamins and minerals, you know, 20 different herbs, even some foods, I think, and they just have all the studies that have been done, and, you know, then they give it a rating, you know, and they basically rate all of them as like zero. But, you know, it's a very conservative approach, but at least you can see a general ballpark of what ones look like they have. But they have very detailed science as to why green tea actually, you know, the phytochemical involved and how it supports the beta cell.
Nice. Well, that's good to know. I mean, when you say zero, are they rating it like, oh, this isn't useful after they find that? Or is
well,
that what you mean when you say zero?
The issue I have with conventional medicine is if there isn't a study that's proven that it works, they say it doesn't work. I'm like, well, just because the study doesn't exist doesn't mean
right.
you don't have hundreds of years of experience with it. You know,
right?
Because
a lot of the
herbs and the vitamins, you can't patent an herb or a vitamin. Like nobody's who's going to do that study,
right? Nobody's going to pay for
thousands,
it.
Right? So
yeah, hundreds
they kind
of thousands.
Throw out,
yeah.
Yeah, so they throw out. You know, well, this hasn't been studied, so we don't recommend it. I'm like, well, okay, can we look a little bit outside of the box here, people? Because this, you know, look at the biochemistry of how it works in the body. Look at the fact that the side effects are almost none. Look
right.
at the fact that it's been used, you know, for hundreds of years.
For hundreds
of years.
But yet
we're not going to rate it, actually, as useful because there's no study.
Yeah.
I'm like, really?
Yeah. Right. That makes total sense. I see that all the time when we're looking at, I like to look at mechanisms. I don't, you know, like to look at necessarily the studies because, they are flawed in a lot of ways, and they are biased because of who's funding the study, right? Drug company comes out with a new drug, they fund the study, they can bias the way this study is run. But, you know, when you look at the chemistry of how things work, I think that that's really the true thing. And then you play it out and you look at chemistry and then clinical experience. You do look at the chemistry, it works, you give it to somebody and it works. That's proof enough to me. I don't need, you know, a double blind placebo-controlled study to tell me, oh, no, that doesn't work, stop using it. Wait a minute, it's already working. I'm not going to stop using it. So that makes total sense.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So I love that you are incorporating the mind. And so let's talk a little bit about that, about how the mind-body stuff is effective in diabetes, in blood sugar management, insulin resistance, as well as full-blown diabetes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I, too, just got distracted because my blood sugar monitor just beeped at me.
Whoops. Oops. Do you have to do something?
Okay. So your question – no, I already have insulin working. So your question is mindset. Okay.
Yep.
So there is a great book called The Biology of Belief by Dr. Bruce Lipton.
And
So it basically, the book is it's all about the power of your thoughts. And it's medically proven, you know, in his book to be one of the most powerful influencers on your health. So, it is medicine. When I work with patients and help them with tools for thinking more positively or being more motivated or being more grateful, that is medicine. I mean, that is a powerful prescription. It is proven to change your biochemistry. So it is an essential piece, and if it's not included in a treatment plan, you're missing one of your most powerful medicines, just like exercise, you know, exercise and mindset. So I have a private program where I work with patients every week on the phone for 3 months, and I don't care if you have diabetes or not, the four pillars of health are focused on, I help all of my patients improve their four pillars, and the four pillars are your mindset, exercise, what you eat, and how much rest and sleep you get. Because if you don't have those four pieces in place, you can't be healthy. I mean, I don't care what your labs say. You know, I don't care if you don't have diabetes. If you don't have those four pillars in place, you're on a downward spiral of poor health.
Right. So, absolutely.
You know, mindset. But that's why I love working with patients. I don't do just one single appointment because how can I really help you make a difference in your life in one single appointment? You know, I can't. It's just a waste of both people's time, in my opinion. So I work with patients, you know, I do a free call for people to just kind of see if we fit together well. And then I work with patients for 3 months because I help you get a better mindset. I help you get exercise regular. I help you with your food. You know, I wear many hats with my patients because that was the kind of doctor I always wanted to find. But, you know, my doctors would, like, look at your sugar levels. Okay, you're fine. On your way. Well, but I just always felt so empty. So, it's you have to have our whole medical approach, I wish, could be in a more, you know, group, community, relationship building. I mean, these one appointments here and there are just obviously not giving
I totally agree. Because you just, people walk away with like, okay, he told me to do this or she told me to do that, or, but how do I actually do that? And what's the motivation behind it? And they don't understand their process. You know, I'm a big fan of explaining mechanisms to people in a way that they can understand. So they go, oh yeah, that's why I shouldn't eat those Fritos. You know, that's why that particular fruit juice is not good for me.
It's I just read something yesterday that talked about the volumes and volumes of research that we have on what it takes to be healthy and how there's almost zero research on how to actually do it, right? How do you actually do the things that we know we need to do? That's the biggest missing piece, and that's what I provide my patients in my, you know, in my intensive 3-month program and why they get such great results.
Well, we are so totally aligned, and I actually do it in groups. So we have a blood sugar balancing program, and we do it for like 3 months, and we just take people through step by step and do demonstrations. They get a lot of videos and food things, and we just take them step by step through it. So it's really an educational. You know, my people end up out of that program knowing more about blood sugar balance than most physicians do because I've explained it to them in a way that it makes sense. Yeah.
Right.
So we're totally aligned there. Totally.
Great.
So let's go to the mindset and tell us more about mindset. How could somebody who's, you know, at this precipice, they think that they may have diabetes, so they at least know they have blood sugar imbalance problems. And what are some of the things they can do to improve that mindset, and how can that affect their blood sugar?
Yeah. Well, one of the programs I have is called How to Eat What You Want and Feel Great as a Diabetic. And people are like, what? How you can eat what you want? I'm like, yeah, exactly. How you can eat what you want and feel great. And how I start that program is I said, okay, what do you want? Okay, I want to be healthy. I want to feel energetic. I want to feel, you know, I want to feel thinner. Okay, what else do you want? Okay, I want to, you know, be able to play with my kids and my grandkids, and I want to be able to travel. And I'm like, okay, you know, I want you to really, really get into what do you want, you know, what do you want? And not a single person that has ever said, when I first answered that question, has they said, you know, I want a Slurpee. You know, So the mindset is to really get yourself in alignment with what you want and then what allows you to have that, right? Well, what allows you to have that is healthy choices, healthy foods, lots of vegetables, you know, exercise. So if you come from a place of should, it will never stick. Yeah. It'll never stick. You'll rebel, you'll give up, it won't last long, you know. So we really have to first get, I always say we're on a journey together. And if we're on a journey, we better know where we're going, right? So I really like to highlight, you know, turn the spotlight on the fact that I feel very confident to say that there isn't anybody that wouldn't want to feel healthy, vibrant, you know, good in their body, limber, energetic, right?
Right.
So
right. That's
the journey. That's the destination, I mean, right? So,
right. Okay,
if that's the destination, now we have to, you know, back up a little bit and say, how are we going to get there? Well, we're not going to get there sitting on our butt eating bonbons. You know,
right. You
think you might want that, but you don't. So we have to get our mindset in alignment with what we want, and then we can get our actions in alignment with what we want. That's a huge piece. If we can't get that, then we're just swimming upstream.
Exactly. Wow.
That's exactly
how we start. I start too. It's just, we're totally in alignment here. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so that's kind of like the big picture mindset, right? The big picture, right? But now we're in the daily grind and we've got 5,000 things going on and, you know, blah, blah, right? Well, then we need to just, I mean, there's so many pieces I teach on mindset. So, but one of them is simply, a gratitude list. Now, that is something that conventional medicine has actually studied and proven that it lowers depression, that it increases happiness, that it brings an attitude of more gratefulness 24 hours a day. And so the first thing I often do to help people just feel more joyful on a day-to-day basis is to simply put a book by your bed, just a plain book, or just a stack of papers. Like, let's make it simple here if you don't want to buy a book. And take 1 minute to write down 5 or 10 things that made you smile that day. You know, the sun came out, my mom called, my mom cried, I had a great healthy salad, I have money in the bank, my feet work great, my eyes work great, and I have this comfy bed that I'm laying in, and I just got to turn the lights on and then off. You know, I can roll those off my tongue, and it breaks my heart how many times I'll ask my patient, I'm like, okay, so, like, for example, what are you grateful for? And it'll take them 5 minutes to come up with, like, it's just, like, we need to be able to just be flooded with thoughts of gratitude.
Absolutely.
And why only 1 minute works is, you know, you don't have to exercise 24 hours a day to be healthier, you know, and you don't have to write down gratitude lists 24 hours a day. But if you commit to 1 minute a day, every day, for a minimum of 4 to 6 weeks, you will feel more grateful 24 hours a day. So it has a, you know, that additive effect, but you must be consistent. And So I have big picture mindset pieces, and then I have just daily mindset pieces as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the gratitude list is just one example of that.
Mm-hmm. I love it because, you know, a minute is easy. you say you're going to do 15, 20 minutes, it gets to be like, when am I going to fit this in? You can fit a minute in anytime, anywhere, right? And especially at bedtime, like, so what? You get to bed a minute later.
Exactly.
You
and
get
I
to bed happier.
People, you know, I'm like, you know what? I don't even care if it's legible. You aren't writing this. I mean, I have 10 years of books that are full of scribbles. I kid you not. Every single page, I'm like, I have no idea what I wrote. I mean, I just, you know, if I think, you know, I'm so grateful I talked to my Aunt Mary. I write Mary. I'm so grateful I went on that awesome bike ride. I put B for a bike. You know, oh, that lunch today was delicious. I write D for delicious. You know, I mean, it takes me literally like seconds. I don't even follow the lines. I don't write on the lines. I just write whatever comes off my pen and then go to bed.
That's awesome, because it's so freeing what you just said, because you're not feeling, and you're doing the act of writing, and I understand the reason for the act of writing versus just thinking it. And maybe you can explain that to people, because there is some powerful implication there. But it's so freeing to just be able to, it doesn't matter if you can read it back, it's just you're expressing it and you're taking it and taking it from your brain and putting it on paper. So tell us a little bit about why it's important to write it versus just think it. Because people say, I always do that. I lay there and I think about it and then I go to sleep.
Well, there's something that happens. I don't know. Maybe you might know more about this than I do. But there's something that happens in the subconscious mind, and it just goes deeper when you put pen to paper. Thoughts, the body doesn't spend a lot of attention with the thoughts. We've got, you know, billions of thoughts going through our mind every second. The mind isn't going to really think that you're serious about any particular thought because we have so many. But when you actually take action on a thought, there's something that shifts in your energy. And it almost is like a message to the body that this is important to me. I'm taking action on this thought. Because thoughts that go through our head, we don't take action on every thought. We only take action on the thoughts that are important to us. So it's really taking a stand and shifting your energy to say, this is important to me. I'm writing it down.
Got it. Yeah.
It's much more
powerful.
Makes sense. It's like picking up a 25-pound weight instead of a 1-pound weight. You know, it has more of an effect.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because I think that when you actually do something with it versus just think it, it's actually involving two different mechanisms, I guess, right? So you actually take it from the brain, and it goes through the hand, and it goes through paper, so it becomes concrete. I love it. I love it. I have a client who's been doing a gratitude journal every year on Thanksgiving. Oh, she does it more often than that, but she does it every year on Thanksgiving. She pulls out this gratitude journal and she just writes for an hour or two. And she reads it back every year, and it just fills her with such delight. You know, and she's 85 and she says, oh, I have so much to be grateful for. You know, especially if, you know, you have a rough year, you know, somebody dies or, you know, things are happening. You go back and go, wow, I have so much to be grateful for.
I mean, this is a huge generalization, but most of us in America are, because we don't have bombs being dropped on us and we have the freedom to make choices. You know, just that right there.
Right.
It's a huge freedom. And then even women, you know, the freedom that we have compared to 100 years ago. I mean, it's just, you know, there's so much. And I've suffered with depression for, you know, throughout my 20s, and I can relate to feeling like life is just a waste of time and I don't want to be here. But, you know, to me, gratitude is a muscle that you have to strengthen. And it's so a gratitude journal is the gym for your mind. And unfortunately we really praise the gym for the body, but yet we're really lacking in tools for the gym of the mind. And frankly, science has proven that the tools for strengthening your mind actually potentially have even more physical benefits for the body than, you know, the physical action of going to the gym. I mean, I'm sure all of us know some people that are just completely obsessed with health and they work out and they won't touch anything except the organic vegetable that they grew. And they're nuts, you know, they have so much stress circulating through their body. That, you know, then there's the people that drink and smoke and they are happy as clams and they're, you know, living in forever. So mindset is a huge prescription. It's one of absolutely my, you know, my essentials for achieving good blood sugar control. And, you know, specifically with diabetes, there's so many gifts diabetes has given me, and we've got to flip that around too and and get out of like, oh gosh, poor me. You know, there's no place for poor me in thriving, healthy body, you know.
Not at all. Not at all. I totally agree. So tell us about what you think people, what's the best way to eat? Or is there a best way to eat for balanced blood sugar?
So this is my second essential of my seven essentials for achieving my first. Well, they're not in any particular order because they're all equally important, but mindset is definitely one. You know, I like to make it in one sentence. Eat food that grows from the earth and eat low carb.
Very good.
It doesn't have to be any complicated than that. I mean, it just breaks my heart to see how complicated eating can be now. Eat food from the earth and eat low carb. I mean,
right.
If our whole country could follow that, it would change the face of America. You know, all this processed foods and packaged foods and sugar and refined carbohydrates, they're killing everybody, be it through diabetes or other diseases. I have a phenomenal recipe that is a flaxseed muffin. You put all the ingredients in a coffee cup, you throw it in the microwave for a minute, and it's a no-carb, low-carb, well, there's a little bit of carb in flaxseed, but... You know, you make eggs for breakfast. You make a flaxseed muffin for breakfast. You hard-boil eggs, and then you just have two hard-boiled eggs on your way out the door. You have an apple with some peanut butter, almond butter. You know, all of those things are food that grew from the earth. The eggs came from the earth. The flaxseeds came from the earth. The peanut butter came from the peanuts or the almond butter, you know, the apple. You know, none of these sugary cereals. You know, like I've had patients that are like, but my healthy nuttos are, it says healthy on it. You know, I'm like, well, you can't. Don't trust anything that's on the label of a box, you know, even all these granolas. I mean, granola can have a ton of sugar. You know, they hide all the sugar in the guise of a healthy food because they call it, or yogurt, you know. Unless you're eating plain yogurt, you know, it's going to have a ton of sugar in it. And it's, but it's, you know, it's very simple. Eat a ton of vegetables, eat nuts, eat great healthy proteins. You know, there's four categories of carbohydrates that are considered healthy. Now, how much you can have of them depends on where your diabetes is at. But there's fruits, there's vegetables, there's legumes, and there's whole grains. And there's no other need for anything else in the carbohydrate world. Like, you don't need pasta. You don't need bread. You don't need crackers. You don't need cereal. You don't, you know, fruits, vegetables, legumes, and whole grains. And I don't even really eat whole grains. I don't even eat grains much. Yeah. I don't eat fruit that much. You know, I eat a ton of vegetables.
Yeah.
And I cover
You're on the same page
oil.
As I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Olive oil, coconut oil, avocados, nuts and seeds.
Yeah.
I don't eat any grains either. Or potatoes. Tell us about potatoes. Are potatoes okay for diabetics and people with insulin resistance? There's this whole thing about, you know, potatoes are clearly listed as a very high glycemic food, but now people are saying, what about cooked, boil them and then make them cold and you get resistant starch. You have any experience with that?
Well, if you want to know what it does to your blood sugar level, test an hour later. I mean, that's what we're really talking about here. High blood sugar level is what's killing people. You know, and the cause of it is what you're eating, but the result is high sugar level. So you want to test the food, eat it on an empty stomach, no fat, no protein, test, eat it, and test an hour later. Not 20 minutes later, not 2 hours later, eat it an hour, test an hour later. You know, if you go up 30, 40 or more points, it's not good. It's raising your sugar level.
Not doing it for you. Right, totally. Yeah, I have so many people testing their blood sugars now, and they're going, their friends are saying, are you diabetic? No, I just don't want to become diabetic, and I just want to protect myself, and I want to eat only the foods that keep my blood sugar stable. Yeah.
Right.
So is it about 20, I tell people no more than 20, 25 points it should go up, ideally.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, to be honest, people are always like, oh, you're 120, not 110, and I'm like, people, the meters are 10 points off anyway, so come on, let's... You know, so if it's 20 points, if it's 30 points, it's, you know, it's not like we're talking, I don't know, like blood pressure. You know, every point in blood pressure makes a difference. But there's, you know, blood sugar levels, I'm not that, you know, I'm not that concerned about every single number. But yeah, you certainly don't want to be going above 30 or 40, that's for sure.
Right, for sure. For sure, and it depends on where you start, too.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. And then, so what about insulin and its effects on blood sugar levels? And explain some of that?
That's a great question. So this is mostly for type 1s, or anybody that's taking insulin. The most important thing I do with patients is make sure that they're on the right dose. So you need a 24-hour baseline. Everybody has a 24-hour drip, if you will, of insulin in a non-diabetic pancreas. There's a little bit of insulin that has to be given just for the functioning of the body. So if you didn't eat anything all day long, your body would still make a little bit of insulin, right? And then there's the mealtime insulin that either the pancreas gives a big burst of insulin to cover your meal based on how much your sugar level is going up, or you do a shot, right? So I've been doing mealtime shots for 35 years. And also my nighttime basal shot, which is my supposedly supposed to last 24 hours. Now, most of them don't last 24 hours, but that's another story. And my biggest pet peeve is that people don't understand how to dose these correctly. Most people are on an incorrect basal dose. And if you're on an incorrect basal dose, you'll never get good blood sugar levels. Because if your basal dose is too high, you're constantly going to have low blood sugar level and you're going to be eating all the time. And if your basal dose is too low, so people look at me, people write down their blood sugar levels all the time, and it is a complete waste of time if I don't know exactly what you're eating, what your exercise is, what your emotional health is. You know, people say, well, I was 300 after I ate breakfast. I'm like, okay, well, were you stressed out? Did you not dose for breakfast? Is your basal rate too low? I mean, you can't just look at a number and say you ate too much or you didn't eat enough. There's so much more that goes into it. And so it's a fine dance. And it's, frankly, the biggest thing that people need to understand is every time you have to eat for a low blood sugar, it's because you have too much medicine in your body. You have too much insulin, oral, whatever you're taking if you're a type 2, or you have too much insulin. So this is my personal, like, if there's one thing that I want to stand on rooftops and yell to all diabetics is, if you're low, take less insulin. Because my whole childhood, they said, Jody, when you exercise, you have to eat. You have to eat. You have to eat. And so I would eat, and I would eat, and I would play, and I would eat, and I would do this, and I would eat, and I would run, and I would eat, and eat. And why didn't anybody say,
when you tell you not to take insulin? Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Well, I'm just feeding my insulin. So, you know, people come to me. I was in complete eating disorder mode because I was trying to be a skinny teenager. And every time I worked out, I had to eat twice as many calories as I was burning. And if someone had just explained to me about the nuances of how I could reduce my insulin, now I can exercise. I don't worry about going low. I don't go low. I don't eat. You know, I don't have to eat when I actually. I mean, that to me is truly a priceless. $1 million. I would have paid $1 million to know that when I was 12. because every doctor says, when you exercise, you have to eat. When you exercise, well, that's the last thing that we diabetics need. We don't need to eat more. Like, come on. Like, it's just going to put us on a roller coaster of I'm low and I'm eating. Now I ate too much, so I'm high, and now I give myself insulin, and then I overshoot, now I'm low. Right? So if you don't have a lot of insulin in your system, you cannot go low. A diabetic cannot go low on their own. That's the whole definition of diabetes. If you don't make insulin, you cannot go low. And that's the number one thing I love to teach. Is like, if you learn how to dial in, you can't have no insulin. I mean, you have to have some insulin in your body at all times. I'm not saying don't have any insulin in your body, but every single unit of insulin adds up to a higher potential of going low. So
And long-term side effects of insulin, and that's another thing to consider too. So the lower you keep it, and you can use your pillars, right, of keeping it in as low. So you want to keep your insulin level as low as possible. We are just about out of time, and I wanted to open up for questions. We can continue for 15 minutes after, but all the people who are listening on the radio show, you'll have to come back afterwards and listen to the recording. People on the phone, if they do have questions, can ask questions. The show didn't get scheduled for as long as it was supposed to get scheduled for. So what I want to say is I want to just let people know how they can get in touch with you. So tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Well, there's several ways. You can just go to my website. It's drjodynd.com. It's spelled drjodyn as in natural, D as in doctor, .com. Dr. Judy and D, you can send me a note there through the contact form. And if you already are committed and really ready to make a difference and a huge, wonderful, positive transformation in your health, then just go to consult with Dr. Jody. It's spelled consult, C-O-N-S-U-L-T, with, W-I-T-H, Dr. Jody, D-R-J-O-D-Y, consultwithdrjody.com. I actually have two pages that are similar. I have just that page, but then I also have consultwithdrjody.com/type1. That page just simply talks more about diabetes, but it doesn't really matter if you go to the first one or second page. And then there, you immediately get taken to my my complimentary consult calendar, and you can sign up for a complimentary phone call. And there's an application, there's questions that you'll have to answer before we get on the call, just so I know where you're at and what your goals are. But yeah, I love meeting new people. And so anybody that's, if you're really like, I want to talk to Dr. Jody and I want to feel awesome, then go to consultwithdrjody.com and sign up for a private consult.
Great. Awesome. Awesome. So we have, about 8 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, actually, to take some questions from people who are on the phone.
Great.
So I'm going to introduce Lynn to come on and just explain to people how they can do that. So, Lynn, go for it. You have to open your line. There you are.
There I am. Okay,
yeah.
So if you're already on the phone, press 1 on your telephone keypad, and that will raise your hand for us, and we can open your line, and we can have a conversation. If you're on the web but would like to talk with us live, the number is 424-243-9555, and then, again, press 1 on your telephone keypad, and that will open... We'll open your line. If you're on the chat and would prefer to type it in, on the very bottom of your screen, on your blog talk screen, you'll see the chat, and you can type your questions or comments in, and I will make sure they are said on the air. And that being said, we have a hand, and it's area code 361. Your line is open, area code 361.
Okay. The question I have is, when she named the four pillars, I didn't understand what she said when she named the fourth one.
Okay. Food?
I know she said it was mindset, nutrition, exercise, and what was the fourth one?
Sleep and rest.
Okay. Sleep and rest.
Great.
All right.
Thank you. Is that Glenn?
Yeah, that's Glenn.
Hi, Glenn.
How you doing?
Good. All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for asking for clarification.
Okay. Well, thanks for clearing it up.
Thanks, Glenn.
All right. We had, looks like one other hand is open. You want to get that one, 802?
It's me, Sarah Grace. Hi, everybody. And
hi,
once
Sarah
again,
Grace.
Thrilled to be, hi, once again, thrilled to be on the phone. I feel that I need to eat a very low carbohydrate diet. And I'm a vegan, so I don't want any animal products, but I want a low carbohydrate diet. And I love vegetables. I eat a ton of vegetables. And but I really do think that I'm addicted to carbohydrates. Now, I am not talking about unhealthy carbohydrates. I'm talking about, you know, things that some people can eat, like a lot of fruit and potatoes or sweet potatoes or winter squash or carrots or beets. I mean, I love all those vegetables. But I really feel that it's an addiction and that it's causing me trouble. So, again, I don't want to overdo, you know, nuts and seeds, and, you know, so I'm really concerned about getting enough nutrients if I feel that I need to be in a very low-carb diet, and I'm depending on carbs right now.
So my experience is I don't recommend veganism for people with diabetes issues. You're too limited with protein. I don't think it's a good choice. And you definitely can have overwhelming carb cravings on a vegan diet because there are so many carbs. And what can happen is the flora in your gut becomes imbalanced. And sometimes when people tell me they crave carbs and they just feel like they're addicted, I immediately know that the flora in the gut is not in balance. And when we eat carbs, we're feeding the yeast, we're feeding the candida. And when the candida and the yeast kind of take up too much real estate in the gut, then the healthy bacteria that we're so dependent on for so many different systems in the body becomes kind of pushed out of the way. So it's a double whammy because you have too much yeast, and the yeast actually are alive, right? They're alive. They want to be fed. And what do they want? They want carbs. And they literally secrete a chemicals that then tell your brain, you know, I need more food, feed me. And so as soon as I know somebody says I just feel addicted, I know that they have way too much yeast in their gut. So I put patients on anti-candida protocols, and the easiest step in that protocol is to really introduce a lot of the healthy probiotic flora, either through fermented foods like sauerkraut, a few bites at every meal, and or taking a probiotic twice a day. But there is, you need to kill off the yeast, you need to stop feeding the yeast, and then you need to regrow the probiotics in order to kind of have your mental state come back to balance. Because too much candida not only can cause sugar cravings, but it can cause anxiety, foggy thinking, depression, bloating, gas. I mean, there's a lot of issues. And I see that, unfortunately, a lot with patients that are vegan because their diet is so heavily in carbs.
Well, you've got me pegged because I have all those things that you just talked about. And so I do thank you because I do have that. So I hear that nuts and seeds and healthy fats don't do it, that you really believe there has to be animal protein. I think that's what you're saying.
Well,
and I'm going to just jump in here.
Is that...
Go ahead. And I'll jump in. Go ahead and I'll jump in after you say what you didn't say.
Is that... it's just vegans generally eat too many carbs. So it's just I see candida with vegans all the time. So it's just a hard diet to not create that imbalance in the gut. I'd be more than happy to talk to you more about it if you want to, you know, go to consult with Dr. Jody and we can talk more. But it's pretty hard to not produce a yeast imbalance if you're on a vegan diet.
Yeah, and that's where I was going to
suggest. Thank you, Dr. Jody.
Because there are, in general, I mean, I think it's a generalization that vegans eat too many carbs. I've been doing an extreme low-carb vegan diet for the last 4 years. Before that, I was eating fruit, too much fruit probably. But it's totally possible. But I think you have to get over, you have to do what you said about killing off the yeast and restoring the gut flora. And it's totally possible to have a fully balanced vegan diet that is low carb. And I'm living proof of it, and I've guided lots of people through it. But it does take effort, and it does take the desire to do it, and a lot of people have that desire. So I think it's a broad generalization, and I hear a lot of people who are not vegans or don't advocate it or have never tried it themselves really say that. But I know that it works, and it works beautifully when you can do it right, and you just... The large majority of the diet gets to be vegetables, non-starchy vegetables,
and
you know, good fats like avocado and coconut and nuts and seeds all sprouted and germinated and all that. So I think it's totally possible. I just want to step in and say that.
And I'm glad that you said that because I certainly didn't mean to say it wasn't possible. You know, I'm glad you said that. So it is. You're gonna have to plan a lot and be prepared to make sure the balance is present. You know, you can't just skip animal protein and then eat what's in front of you because you're going to have to really make sure you plan appropriately. And so if you're dedicated and disciplined, you're right, it can be done. Like I said, a generalization, many vegans have candy just because they don't do the planning that's needed.
Exactly. And they eat way too much carbs. So anyway, just wanted to jump in and say that. Cool. Thank you.
Thank you for making that point. Thank you, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think that's it, and we're just about at the end of time. Do you have anything else? I mean, how, like, to wrap all this together? Like, just give us a good wrap-up of, you know, what closing words you want to leave people with.
Yeah. Well, health really is a long-term committed relationship. And
I love it.
There are essential steps, and one of the biggest ones is really making it a focus of your life, not just focusing on your social engagements and your to-do list. It's a long-term relationship, and it needs time, and it needs action and energy and appreciation, and that's mm-hmm. why I love helping people in my three-month program, because it's a relationship that comes to the forefront of your mind when you work with somebody. Having
right.
support is shown to be one of the most effective
right.
prescriptions, if you will, for taking good care of your health. For whatever reason, we all function better when we have support. You know, one of my favorite examples is, you know, Olympic athletes aren't poor athletes unless they need a coach. You know, they're the best athletes in the world, and they have a coach, because when you have support, you do better. And so I would love to, you know, if you're interested in, you know, consult with drjody.com or Dr. Rita Marie, you know, reach out for support, because you will flourish when you have support more than when you're generally by yourself.
Right. Absolutely. I totally agree with that. So thank you so much for being here and for all the great work you're doing and really changing the attitude and the mindset about blood sugar imbalance and diabetes. And I just love the whole thing you talked about with not feeling victimized, because that's a problem I see not just
yeah.
with diabetics, but in general, when people have been suffering from some sort of health issue for a long time, they tend to turn into the victim mode and, oh, poor me, and I'll never get better. And then they won't get better, because that's their attitude.
Right.
So it's really
right.
helping them to shift that. So there was, Lynn said there's a free offer at the bottom of the page. Was there something that you wanted to
yes.
tell people about that? Yeah, go ahead and tell people about that.
Yeah, on the bottom of your page. It's kind of a long URL, but it's on the bottom of your blog page. You can sign up for a free, the 7 essentials of living a happy, healthy life with diabetes. It's a 9-page PDF that I wrote. And, for those of you that are prepared, the URL is diabetesbundlegift.vipresponde.com. So you can just go to Dr. Rita Marie's blog page and then click on
right.
it, and then you could take to my to the page where you can get my free PDF on the 7 essentials of having a healthy life with diabetes.
Great. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to share with people. And I can feel, you know, your genuineness and your passion for helping people. And it's awesome, the perspective that you're taking and coming from a place where this isn't just something you learned about at school. This is something you've lived through for a long time
yeah.
and can really
yeah.
share and help people to take that. But we'll say, well, you don't know, because you've never been in my shoes. You've never had XYZ disease. I'm like, yeah, sure. Tell me about it.
So,
thank
it's
you.
Great, because lots of patients come to me and they actually make changes because they know that they'll listen to me, but nobody else.
exactly, you know, because you've been there. So it's Dr. Jody Stanislaw,
yes.
and she's at drjodynd.com. So go check out her page and have a great rest of the evening, rest of the week, and we'll talk again really, really soon. And make healthy choices and live a vibrant life. Your choices every day affect how you feel and how you look and how you act. So thank you so much. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, drritamarie.com, and we'll be talking real soon. Bye-bye.